This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
May I have your attention, please? Now, taking the airwaves on 97.3 The Fan. San Diego's own, Gwen and Chris.
Featuring Tony Gwynn Jr.
It actually keeps people from, at the end of the year, where they know they're not in the playoffs, because if you don't, you could end up playing a flute at the Embarcadero.
And Chris Ello.
Just trying to do a radio show here, and Scraby's babbling on about stuff during the break. We have to turn your mic off just to return to the airwaves.
We're here at Petco.
Gwen and Chris starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
Yes, indeed. Hour number two, 4:04 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. Coming up in the next 30 minutes, listen for your name to be called and call back at 833-288-0973 to win a pair of tickets to see the Padres host the Dodgers on September 24th, plus a pair of tickets to see San Diego State host Utah State on September 21st.
That's a good game right
there. It will be. You'll also be entered into our grand prize drawing for a two-night stay at the Venetian Resort in Las Vegas, including a trip to Legacy Stadium, the ultimate sports bar with stadium-style seating. Make sure you sign up at 973thefansd.com/biggestfan to enter to win. All right, we've taken care of that business. Let's get back to Chris versus the Fan. Chris is on a nice little roll here. Corey in Fallbrook, welcome to Gwen and Chris. Thanks for calling in. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday.
Hey, Corey.
Here we go, Corey. First question. Who was the head coach of the Rams before Sean McVay?
Jeff Fisher
is correct.
Well done, Corey.
Nice work, Corey. Here we go. Question.
He was on Hard Knocks.
He was on Hard Knocks. Was a very uneventful Hard Knocks, because I don't even remember one episode.
Not too much.
Here we go. Question number two. Where did Colin Kaepernick play college football?
I feel like I should know that, but I'm not recalling it. Mississippi State.
Mississippi State is wrong. Christopher?
Yes.
Chance for a steal here.
I know that one.
I knew you knew this
one. But the question is Scraby going with the name of the school when he played there, or the name of the school now?
It's the same thing.
Because it has changed.
It has changed. Both answers will be accepted.
All right. He played at Nevada.
Indeed he did.
In Reno.
Nice work, Corey. Thanks for calling in. Unfortunately, your time has ended.
I think he whipped the Aztecs one night pretty bad, too.
I think he did, too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Greg and Hamul, welcome to Gwen and Chris. Thanks for calling in. Happy Tuesday.
Hey, guys. Good to hear from you.
Hey, Greg.
Here you go. First question, Greg. What AFC team was the only team to beat the Jaguars in 1999? Jaguars, sorry.
So 1999, only AFC team beat the Jaguars. Wow, I have no idea. I'm one of those Raider people, so I'll go Raiders.
Good guess, but incorrect.
If I'm not mistaken, 1999 was the year the Jaguars won almost every game they played, but lost the AFC Championship game at home to the team that kept beating them that year, which was the Tennessee Titans.
Only Chris would have all of those facts perfectly correct, too. That is correct, Chris. Greg, your time has come to an end.
I thought that was a great one.
That was a good one. I didn't think Chris would be able to get that one.
No, and then he gave every fact about it. What was the temperature like that day, Chris?
62 degrees.
All right, Jeremy.
And kickoff.
In Carlsbad.
Oh, it went down, huh?
Welcome to Gwen and Chris. Thanks for calling in. Happy Tuesday.
Taco Tuesday here at the ballpark.
It is Taco Tuesday.
Hey, Jeremy, you can say that now, but pretty soon it's going to cost you.
Yeah. Here we go.
Isn't somebody going to LeBron, right?
LeBron's been.
And how is he going to monitor that?
He's not.
Well, I don't know. Don't they have like a system where you can monitor that? Did Michael Buffer have that?
But I don't think that
he's got enough money to pay for it.
I don't think that you can. Trademark Taco Tuesday.
Are you kidding me? We can't even say that those special words.
Yeah, you can't even say the big, and you can't say the big game.
But that's a phrase. Never mind. We
so it's Taco Tuesday is a phrase too. Here we go.
Pat Riley trademarked repeat, and I think he made
a made up thing.
Boatload out of
Taco Tuesday is just two words put together.
Made up thing. Here we go.
Made up thing. Anyway, Jeremy, you've created a firestorm.
What is the nickname of Penn State? Nickname, mascot, same thing.
Nickname.
Jeremy,
you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I just don't know.
He's resigned.
I need an answer.
Yeah.
You don't know?
I don't have one.
All right.
Penn State Nittany Lions.
That is correct.
I don't know what a Nittany Lion is.
I don't either.
I really don't. I never did.
Looks pretty cool in their logo, though.
It's a one that knits.
That's why we keep Scraby's mic off whenever possible.
Mark in Rancho Penasquitos, welcome to Gwen and Chris. Thanks for calling in. Happy Tuesday.
I thought that was a good joke.
Happy Tuesday, guys.
First question. Where did Jalen Ramsey play his college football?
Florida State.
Florida State is correct. Nice work.
Well done.
On to question number two. In the movie Rookie of the Year, team did Henry Rowengartner play for?
Chicago Cubs.
Chicago Cubs is correct.
Better question would have been, of all time.
Well, a better question would have been, who did he beat in the World Series?
Yeah, because I can't think of that.
The Mets.
The Twins, because the Cubs wouldn't play the Mets in the World Series.
Oh, yeah.
You dummy.
No, but when he did the floater? He was against the Mets.
He said it so confidently, Mets.
I don't think it was the Twins.
It's my favorite movie of all time, and in the World Series, the Cubs played
the Mets. They're in the Metrodome.
Remember that movie, Manager of the Year or whatever?
We digress. Here we go. Question number three.
Mark's trying to win a prize here.
Sorry, Mark.
What team did Booger McFarland win his first Super Bowl with?
Tampa Bay.
That is correct.
All right.
Nice work, Mark.
Good job,
you
Mark.
You saved Scraby because he was running out of question number one. So
nice work.
Congratulations, Mark. Stay on the line. We'll get you those tickets. And Mr. Thomas Andrews will take care of you.
Odd Thomas will take care of you. Mark, nicely done. You'll be going to see the Dodgers. I beg your pardon, the Padres and the Diamondbacks playing. That'll be another key series coming up here next week at Petco Park. Good job by everybody today on Chris versus the fans. I want it known, dude, that every now and again, the fans get a question correct that I have no idea what the answer is.
Was that last
one?
But
you guys just don't know that I don't know.
No, because you never get
the
chance to
answer. Because I don't have to answer.
Indeed.
So you're right. Like, I didn't know Booger McFarland, and I didn't know another one in that sequence either. Oh, Jalen Ramsey.
Florida State, you didn't
know
that. No,
I didn't know that either.
Ah.
So, you know, sometimes sometimes I'm really, really rooting for the listeners to get it right.
So you don't have to be
exposed. So that I don't have to get it wrong. I don't have to be exposed. Because people like to think that I know everything, and it really is far from the truth. But, you know it's nice.
Quite a bit, though.
It's nice to have the image.
You rattled off a 1999 series of NFL football stuff. Because I knew the Jaguars lost to the Titans, but I couldn't tell you that they lost twice, and then they lost again in the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, that was a weird year.
I'm looking up this Rookie of the Year thing, and Little Big League was the one. No, they didn't play the Mets, but that's who he struck out. Little Big League, he was the manager of the Twins, the kid.
Oh, you might be right.
Yes!
You might be right.
Chris is giving me the evil
second. In a Rookie of the Year, so you're saying they didn't get to the World Series?
I don't
think
they played the World Series. They just played the last game against the Mets where he had to do the floater, and then they
won. I got to be honest with you. It was such a bad movie. I can't believe that we're spending any time on it. I mean, when you list the great baseball movies of all time, I know the Scraby list is different from most. But believe me, Rookie of the Year doesn't even get thought of.
Tony, we're almost the same age.
I like Rookie of the Year. It was a good movie for my age at that time, but it doesn't fit in my top, you know,
well,
three
I think we
movies.
Found a countdown topic. So.
Oh, boy. All right, we're going to step away.
What, top five baseball movies?
That's a great one.
Can do it.
All right, we're going to step away and take a break. When we come back, we got Brent Sobleski, Bleacher Report. We're going to talk some NFL, but before we do that, let's take a look at some traffic.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Major League, Moneyball, Field of Dreams.
All better.
Oh, I'm just warming up. The Natural. Lie to the Yankees. Yep. Bull Durham. Bad News Bears.
Yep.
8 men out. 61.
Which one? What was the last one you said?
8 men out.
I don't think I've seen that one.
Perfect Game. Brewster's Millions.
The Jackie Robinson flick was...
42.
42.
What about 61 Asterisk?
I didn't say that one, but yes, 61 Asterisk. There's so many great baseball movies, and to put Rookie of the Year at the top of your list is unfathomable.
By the way, it was just brought to my attention that the kid in Rookie of the Year would later go on to be Kevin in American Pie.
Yes, sir.
Mind blown. There you go with those stupid
I don't know why I said
sound
that.
Effects.
Chris is like, I don't care.
I just now put that together. That
what a career that guy had.
Man.
I mean, American Pie is making good syndication money.
It sure is.
What a career. All right. Speaking of great careers, great guys, Brent Sobleski, Bleacher Report, one of our favorites, talking football here with us on Gwynn and Chris. Sorry to delay you there, Brent, but... If your producer told you that Rookie of the Year was the greatest baseball movie ever made before the break, you'd have to respond.
No, you're absolutely right. Lay down the law. And one of the ones you didn't even mention that I enjoyed was For the Love of the Game, the Kevin Costner.
Clear the Mechanism.
Very good one, yeah.
Yes. And by the way, that was Sam Raimi before he did the Spider-Man franchise.
So and the Evil Dead.
Yes. Well, that would have been after Evil Dead, so that would have been sandwiched between Evil Dead and Spider-Man.
See, this is why we got Brent on the show.
He's well-rounded. Well-rounded.
Absolutely.
Literally.
Yep. You're festively plump. I like to hear it. All right, Brent.
Thin is in, but fat's where it's at, gentlemen. Remember that.
All right. National Football League is what we're supposed to be trying to talk about here. Brent Sobleski, Bleacher Report, very kind to join us. I just throw you a general thing out the chute, Brent. What stood out to you, maybe top two things from the weekend, first week of the NFL?
Well, to me, the overall encompassing topic that I saw coming out of week one is how little we saw the preparation for certain teams, mm-hmm. especially with younger head coaches. If you had a coach within his first or second year, you did not perform well. And so when you take all that time off during preseason and you don't play your starters and you don't establish a rhythm and then you go into regular season, which essentially becomes an extension of the preseason, you're not going to play well. You know, you see established teams like the New England Patriots just hit the ground running. Kansas City Chiefs hit the ground running. And so there was the haves and have-nots of that opening weekend. It was either you looked great or you looked absolutely abysmal. And so the in-between, between those 2 points was few and far between.
Brett, one of the players that, you know, really went off in week one was Lamar Jackson. Had a great day throwing the ball around. Of course, he was playing against the Miami Dolphins. Do you think that is something that we're going to see more of from Lamar Jackson, or was that just him playing against the Miami Dolphins?
Well, first of all, you can only beat who they put in front of you.
Touche.
If you just dominate them, that's exactly what you should be doing. Touché. And so I had the pleasure of speaking with his personal quarterback coach, Joshua Harris, a week before the regular season. And Harris dropped a bomb on me at that time, and he stated, I fully expect Lamar Jackson to play more from the pocket than run the football this year. And I called him crazy, basically, during our podcast, because all we have heard is about this revolutionary yeah. rushing offense where he's going to run the ball more than Cam Newton did during his MVP year. And guess what? 3 carries for 6 yards. Look, we know what Lamar Jackson can do as an athlete. We know what he can do running the football. His mobility is absolutely exceptional, the best we've seen since Michael Vick.
Yeah.
But we forget what he did at Louisville because there was so much consternation over the narrative that he was, is he a wide receiver or a running back or a quarterback, which is all overblown. He just needed time to really get himself built up from a mechanic standpoint. And this is something I spoke with Josh Harris about, how that they continued to work on his base all offseason
yeah.
so that it became part of his muscle memory, and he drove through the football to increase his accuracy, how they changed his grip so that he can control the ball better and spin it better overall. And these are all things that we're going to see throughout the season. It looked great initially, but I expected him to continue to build upon that performance, even if you're not as an exceptional or perfect as he actually was in that first performance.
Well, he couldn't ask for a better start to the season schedule-wise, because after Miami gets Arizona, and coming into the – I mean, I thought Arizona looked all right the other day late in the game, but two of the weaker teams on the schedule to start. Brent Sobleski is joining us from Bleacher Report. The Cleveland Browns, obviously, everybody talked them up and maybe talked them up too much. Maybe they thought too much of themselves. Or maybe it just wasn't that bad of a game. I mean, they lost 43-13, but – 28 of those points were scored in the last 15 and a half minutes. Do the Browns bounce back from this, or do you lump them in again with the young first-year coaches who just weren't ready to go?
No, it was that bad. Look, I live in Ohio. I've followed the Browns since their return in 1999. That was as embarrassing of an effort as I've ever seen from the team during that entire stretch. And I've watched the 0-16 team in every ref, so that gives you an idea of how I felt. And the reason why is this. They were completely undisciplined. They lost their composure, and they just did not show up and play the type of football that they're capable of. And so once you place those type of expectations, knowing the caliber of talent that's on the roster, you cannot lay that type of egg in that situation. And they did completely in 100%. And so that's why I look at them and place that entirety, the problems on head coach Freddie Kitchens, because when you have lack of discipline, when you have lack of composure, when you're not fully prepared and can make mistake after mistake, to me, that's a reflection of the coaches and not necessarily the players.
Yeah, I didn't expect you to say that. Brett Sobleski joins us, Bleacher Report, joining us on the SDCC
Fan
Hotline.
But I'm glad he said it now, because I can really jump in and get mad and hate Baker Mayfield as much as I want to now. I've been being reserved about it because I'm worried that the Browns might come
actually
back and make
really
me
good,
look bad. Yeah.
Brett, I got
One thing I'll say about Baker real quick is that he's getting a bit of a reprieve from the mistakes that were made.
Yeah.
I know he had the 3 interceptions, and people will say that he was forced to make those type of throws late in the contest. But well before that, he was fading in the pocket. He wasn't the same type of player that we saw last year. And so he shouldn't come off scot-free from a poor performance himself.
Brett, let me ask you a little bit about the Oakland Raiders, because they dealt with a bunch of turmoil during training camp, up to the first day of their first game of the season, and then they come out and look pretty efficient. And this may speak to your whole first year coaching versus guys who have experience, because I saw a running back that looked good in Josh Jacobs. I saw a quarterback in Derek Carr that was efficient and got the ball out of his hands. And I saw a defense that finally could put pressure on the quarterback. What did you see from Oakland?
I saw an offensive line that protected Derek Carr to the nth degree. And when you're facing Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, the fact that he was basically unscathed through that entire contest set up your offense and its success. That,
yeah.
They went out and made Trent Brown the highest paid offensive lineman in NFL history on an annual basis. And then they moved him to right tackle. And everyone thought, why would you do that? Well, it's because they had a first-round draft pick and Colton Miller playing on that side, who, by the way, graded horribly in his first season. So the fact that they were able to control at the point of attack and in the trenches consistently to run the football and have this efficient passing offense to protect Derek Carr, to me, says that's how they're building the right way. When you look at what happened with Antonio Brown, how much does it really affect the team? I mean, he wasn't there.
Right.
So they went about their business every single day and did what they were expected to do, and they built off of that. And so you see the talent they still have on the roster with a Tyrell Williams or with a Josh Jacobs. And they're a team that's better than they were overall last year.
No question. Raiders looked pretty sharp last night, must admit. Not as sharp, though, as the team that played Sunday night. And I don't think anybody expected them to look as sharp as the New England Patriots. And I don't see how you can get into a season without asking and thinking to yourself, is it possible that anyone's going to be able to beat the New England Patriots? I imagine they could lose a playoff game. Anybody could, but the odds of that happening just seem more and more remote. I know it's only one game, but as the seasons go along, they just seem to be almost widening the gap on the rest of the league. Do you agree, or is that just a one-game overreaction?
Well, first of all, let's point out that they dismantled the Pittsburgh Steelers. I mean, they just absolutely destroyed them, and it was amazing to watch, because I'll eat a little crow and say, right off the bat, the one team I expected to surprise and win against Fred were the Steelers, because in previous seasons, when you looked at the Patriots, usually they took a little time to get to the Super Bowl caliber teams that they were. You know, last year they were 1-2 in their first three games. The year before, they got thumped by the Chiefs in the season opener, and yet they came out and looked spectacular. And it's not just Tom Brady, who, by the way, now adds Antonio Brown. They were solid in the trenches, and I know I emphasize this a lot, but let's consider that last year's success was built primarily on the best interior in offense in football. Then you lose David Andrews to blood clots. That is scary unto itself. So within a week and a half, you have to replace one of the most steadfast centers in the league, and you do so without missing a beat. Furthermore, you have arguably the best secondary in the NFL. You have all these guys. You bring back a Jamie Collins, who all of a sudden looks really good again. It's just amazing how that system sets everybody up for success, because everyone buys in. And so when you have that and you continue to build on it, no one can replicate it, and allows you to get further and further ahead each and every year.
It is amazing what the Patriots do. I don't think any of us want to, you know, admit it, unless we're just diehard Patriot fans, but we have to. You have to face what's there. All right, Brent, thanks so much. Hey, before you go, give us the name of your podcast so people can download that.
Oh, I appreciate that. It's myself and two of my Bleacher Report colleagues, Brad Gagneau and Gary Davenport. It's at Pro Football Fire. You can get it at iTunes, SoundCloud. Point you along the way.
You never do.
Thank you, Brent.
Never disappoint, Brent. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it. Good chatting with you. Brent Sobleski there from Bleacher Report. SDCCU has auto loan rates as low as 3.15% APR. And low rates means low payments. Apply today at SDCCU.com. And Brent Sobleski joined us on the SDCCU fan hotline. I hadn't realized it, but until he mentioned it, so I went back while he was talking. There was 8 coaches who made their debut with new teams in week one. Only one guy won his first game. And it was probably one of the guys we thought would win the least.
Who?
Matt LaFleur. He was the only one who won.
Do they play the Raiders this year by any chance? Green Bay?
Oh, my God. I hope he gets another chance to see John Gruden.
Just so he can have maybe a couple wins under his belt, feel a little differently
going
into that.
Feel a little better, more, yeah. Kingsbury
they
got,
sure do.
They do, huh?
Win.
October 20th in Lambeau.
Oh good. Good for Matt LaFleur. Hey, look, LaFleur was the only rookie to win. Kingsbury got a tie, so I want to mention that. All right, Alfred Zamora. If your name is Alfred Zamora, that's good news, because you're our biggest fan today. You got 10 minutes to call us back, beginning now, 833-288-0973. Alfred, if you call back, you will win a pair of tickets to see Padres-Dodgers September 24th, plus Aztecs-Utah State September 21st, and better than all that, you'll be entered to win our grand prize, a two-night stay at the Venetian Resort Las Vegas, including a trip to Legacy Stadium, the ultimate sports bar, a restaurant with stadium seating featuring elevated game time classics, and gourmet options from Emeril Lagasse.
Bam!
There you go. He did that yesterday. Yeah. And he thought he was really cute. Make sure to sign up at 973thefansd.com/biggestfan. Get yourself entered. It is the easiest contest you could ever be a part of. All you have to do is listen for your name. And today, that name, Alfredo Zamora. Give us a call, Alfredo. Your 10 minutes starts now. And our Big Five starts next when we come back. It's Gwynn and Chris. Nice show rolling along here. Thanks to all of you for participating. And we'll keep it going until 6 o'clock on 97.3 The Fan.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tony Gwynn, Jr., Chris Zello. About that time, hand the show over to Matt Scraby for the Big Five.
It's now time for the most unpredictable, most wacky, most opinionated segment of the show.
I wouldn't brag about it.
Gwynn and Chris talk about the best of the rest.
Great balls of fire!
Ooh, with a twist.
Personally, I think we got hosed on that call.
The Big Five begins right now.
Don't panic, but there's absolutely nothing to worry about.
On 97.3 The Fan.
You know, I completely forgot to mention this yesterday, but I really appreciated everybody out there that sent me tweets about the Dolphins being a part of the Big Five yesterday. Everybody was like, you need to make this a part of the Big Five to get Chris all mad at you. So thank you.
There wasn't anything you could do after that game to get me mad. I mean, it was so humiliating on its own. Hey, real quick, before we get to the Big Five, guys, I want to congratulate Alfredo Zamora, our biggest fan today, called in.
Yeah!
Beat the 10-minute clock and won all those prizes. So if you'd like to be our biggest fan, again, make sure you sign up at 973thefansd.com/biggestfan. I'm very glad that I have had the impact on listeners now. A whole new generation of fish haters out there now.
Fish haters.
That are just going to root against the Dolphins so that I'm unhappy. Thank you, people. That's very kind of you.
I like you, fish haters.
Yeah.
If you want to send me any topics to make fun of Chris, then find me on Twitter, at Matt Scraby. Let's get to it.
Number five.
I hate talking about the Patriots, but this was a good one. Retired Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski has been making the media rounds lately, which means, of course, he is going to be asked about Antonio Brown joining his former team. Gronk appeared on Fox and Friends and reminded everyone that the Patriots have a history of bringing on troubled receivers and getting the most out of them. He said, quote, "Patriots always bring on players like that. They always do a great job. Bill Belichick is an unbelievable head coach and knows how to handle situations like that," end quote. Gronk went on to say that he doesn't think AB is going to be a problem on this Patriots team. So, Chris, you're up first. What would get AB kicked off a Bill Belichick team?
What would?
Yes.
Not just not knowing what to do, not doing his job. I mean, that was the whole piece they did on NFL Network last week, right? About the Patriots, 3-part series. Do your job.
But don't you think that AB has a longer leash if he doesn't understand?
He has a little. No, I don't think he'll get a whole lot longer leash. I don't think Belichick has gotten where he is by giving certain guys longer leashes. I mean, I think he'll give Antonio Brown some time to get to know the offense, of course. He has to give him a certain amount of time. But if Antonio Brown wants to stay in New England, he better do his job. And he better obviously perform at 110%. And he better show up at every single meeting. And he better be on time and ready to go. And I don't think Belichick takes any guff on that kind of stuff. And I don't think any other coach should.
Tony, what do you think? What would get AB kicked off a Bill Belichick team?
Not much. I mean, just not showing up for a meeting, being late. I think he'll give the only thing he'll be given a longer leash on is knowing the offense. It's a pretty...
Isn't it just go deep for AB?
No. That's the thing, is that the reason why they're bringing AB in is because they don't have the guy who can take out the middle of the field. Gronk is no longer there to do it. You bring AB in, not only can he go deep, but he can run all the other routes too, which
he
makes
can,
him
he can
dangerous.
Turn around at the line of scrimmage, catch the ball, and run 75 yards before anybody touches him.
So I think based off of that, the only thing he'll be given a leash on is learning the offense. Everything else, he'll be expected to be just like everybody else.
So you're saying that if he makes a comment out of line, he's gone?
Yes.
Interesting. I just think that they're not going to go through all this to just kick him off the team if he says one
Are
bad thing.
Are you kidding me? They have done it many a times before.
That's how they get these guys in the first place.
All right.
Because these guys get there and they know this is their last shot.
Exactly. I think there's a sense of respect about this organization. Despite how they may feel when they are in other teams, they know as soon as they sign on the dotted line of the Patriots that there's an expectation that you conduct yourself the same way everybody else does.
Thomas, a resident Patriots fan, what do you think?
Well, Belichick has suspended guys and not played them because
in
they were
Super Bowl.
In late to meetings
point.
Or late to team meetings because of a blizzard even.
Or because
they
were
Randy Moss
sick.
Got in trouble. Adalius Thomas got benched and cut because he missed practice because of a blizzard and said he couldn't make it to work. And Belichick said, unacceptable.
All right, you guys have changed my mind.
Unlike my favorite coach in college football, Nick Saban, who I don't know if you guys heard this about Nick Saban. The first game this year, Alabama played Duke, right? There was, from what I understand, there was two or three kids suspended for the first half of that game for various violations, except... the score was 0-0 at the end of the first quarter, so those kids came back in the game early.
Mm. Oh.
That's what Nick Saban does. Just a little, another reason why I love him so much.
All right, let's move to, you guys changed my mind.
Four.
You guys changed my mind. Rams running back Todd Gurley didn't play much in the Super Bowl last season because of supposed knee issues, and he didn't play much in Sunday's game against the Panthers. Gurley only had 5 carries at the half, but ended up with 14 carries for 97 yards in the Rams' 30-27 win over the Panthers. Fans were concerned about Gurley, and Fox Sports' Jay Glazer said, quote, "The Rams are kind of going into this blind. They have no idea how the knee is going to respond today or any week this season," end quote. Gurley had 256 rushing attempts and 59 receptions during 14 games in the regular season last year. So, Tony, over under 315 touches for Todd Gurley in the regular season this year.
It's going to be under. It's going to be under. I think that'll be by design. The whole objective is to get him, have him strong at the end of the season when you need him. And based on how they used him in that first game, he got very few carries in the first half. The second half, he got a lot more. And that's how he got close to the 100-yard mark, was because most of it came in the second half. My guess is that's the new norm for him. I mean, they have to protect him somewhat until they get to the closing part of the season in which they need him most. So I say the under.
Chris?
I think the under is correct because they're going to, you know, like you said, use him more wisely. But I want this, I just saw this today, so this I wanted to bring this up. Because all it's something on ESPN about fantasy, and Todd Gurley was in for 51 snaps in the game the other day, as opposed to Malcolm Brown, the guy who had 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. He was only in for 19 snaps.
Right. Which is surprising, because so you think it would be the other way.
Well, that's my point. Gurley played 70% of the snaps, but the Rams were just a little bit more judicious on how often they're giving him the ball. He's still on the field, and I think they realize that just having him on the field makes him a threat and opens things up for everybody else.
Exactly. They have to respect it when he's on the field. Doesn't mean he's going to even touch the ball, but as long as he's on the field, the other team has to account for it.
So anyway, just if you're you know, like, ready to get rid of Todd Gurley because he didn't get the ball enough in week one, just keep in mind he played a lot. They just didn't call his number a lot. So, anyway, there
number
you go.
Three. No, that's good. That's good. Adam Gase, he had a bad debut with the Jets. Or not? Was it a debut? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a debut. Yeah, he had a bad debut with the Jets over the weekend, losing to the Bills. And he took aim at his team in the post-game press conference. This is an article from the New York Post, so I'm reading it from them. And it's just really funny because this
Can
is
we also
media.
Just point out that the New York Post is about half true and half kind of made up.
Well, he's quoting. So, right. Yeah, he said that Gase this guy goes, anyone with a cranium knew exactly who he was talking about. His offensive linemen, too aggressive, which led to free runners on Sam Darnold. His wide receivers must run crisper routes. He claimed that one unnamed player, in parentheses, Robbie Anderson, even screwed him by not finishing a route after a Bills cornerback slipped. His cornerbacks, quote, I feel like we have slight room for improvement. I'll say that nicely. In other words, Tremaine Johnson and Daryl Roberts stunk. So, Chris, what is the quickest way to lose your team as a head coach?
I see why you made that statement before he read those quotes there.
This well, very, very slanted New York Jets
fandom. You don't bring the New York Post into the locker room, first of all, because it's a BS paper most of the way. I've always felt the quickest way to lose your players is to be critical of them when they're down. And the Jets obviously were down after blowing that lead, and I don't think it's good coaching to be further down and put the blame on them after a defeat. Now, when you win and guys are trying to feel good about themselves, then I think you're all right to say, guys, hey, you didn't do your job right. That's a good time to be critical of your players. But I'm not an Adam Gase fan.
No.
I'm not a Brian Flores fan yet either, but I'll give him a little time. But yeah, why take the blame yourself? Look in the mirror. It's usually the best way to go, I think, as a head coach. You usually get better respect that way than any other way.
Tony, what do you think is the quickest way to lose your team as an NFL head coach?
To try to embarrass them. And that's usually done in a public setting. I think that's the quickest way. In this case, I don't necessarily think he didn't mention any names, and I know the New York Post is trying to,
they're just
draw a line from his mouth to what he from what he said to a player. So I don't think that's necessarily I don't think that's necessarily embarrassing because no names were mentioned. I think he did that for a reason because he probably recognizes if I embarrass these dudes in week one of season on a New York stage, I could lose them for the rest of the year. So, New York Post kind of playing a little slanted journalism right there.
I want to ask you guys just a random question. I don't know if you guys actually have anything on the top of your mind. What is the worst thing a coach has done that you guys have seen in the NFL? See, I should have asked you guys.
What's
this
number
before.
Three?
Yeah, it just popped in my head. That was number three.
Oh, that was
two.
Mets ace Noah Syndergaard is not shy of sharing his opinion with anyone. We talked about this a little bit earlier, and the latest happening was a few days ago. Multiple sources confirmed Joel Sherman's report that Syndergaard is unhappy throwing to Wilson Ramos, and that he expressed that to Mets officials. Mets manager Mickey Callaway denied even that Syndergaard is upset, but did say, "quote It's not about making guys happy; it's about winning." Mets general manager Brody Van Wagenen spoke today at length on the Noah Syndergaard-Wilson Ramos situation and acknowledged the issue and that the conversation that took place, but stopped short of calling it a dead issue. Van Wagenen said, "We're a family down there. In a family dynamic, relationships have to be managed." So, Tony, is Noah Syndergaard out of line?
No, he's not out of line, and I'll tell you why. The same thing happened with DeGrom last year. Notice it didn't get leaked, by the way. It was obliged. I can't remember who the catcher was that he wanted to throw to, but that pretty much became his catcher. He went on to have a Cy Young Award year. Syndergaard has a point. I don't know if you guys have seen the numbers based on when Ramos catches him and everybody else, but there's a distinct difference. I think he has somewhere like a 7 ERA with Ramos, and he's got like a 2-something with the other guys.
Can you tell us why it would be different from one catcher to the next?
Catchers see things differently. They see swings differently. They may elect to attack a hitter differently than, one catcher does. And ultimately, I like what Syndergaard said today after this got leaked out. He basically said it's on him to figure it out. That's always going to be your best bet, especially publicly. Now, he also said he wasn't livid, but he did say that they did have an adult conversation about it, and that kind of what needs to happen in those situations, right? You feel in some type of way about who's catching you, how he's catching you, the fingers he's putting down, because ultimately no pitcher likes to shake, right? They want to be able to get the right sign on the first one and go. It's a rhythm thing.
Yeah.
And so I liked his approach today, basically saying it's on me.
He had the conversation. I believe he did have that conversation with Wilson Ramos.
It was supposed to be a private conversation.
It was supposed to be a private conversation. He probably went about it like this, right? He probably did go to the GM, probably did go to the coach. Didn't get happen, and then he probably was forced to have this conversation after it leaked. After it leaked,
awkward.
He probably was forced to have that conversation.
Awkward.
So, ultimately, you know, you don't want to see things like that get leaked, but yeah, I think he kind of has a point.
Chris, is Noah Syndergaard out
but,
of line?
But let me say this. Wilson Ramos is like one of their best hitters right now, so there's a reason why they aren't giving him what he wants, because they need offense in order to win.
Yeah.
5.09 ERA with Ramos, 2.45 ERA with the other guy, Thomas Nido.
A big difference.
Yeah, but I don't blame it all on the catchers. I do blame some of it on Syndergaard, and he should take some of the responsibility for it. But to back up what Tony's saying, as a pitcher, you want the catcher basically living in your head.
Yes.
Whatever you're thinking, you want him thinking. And there are certain catchers that just mesh with you, and there are certain catchers that do not. And if the Mets are not smart enough to realize that Syndergaard doesn't mesh too well with Ramos, that's a little bit on them, too.
Yeah.
I mean, they need to get the right guy out there to catch their big guy who's their ace or one of their aces. So, you know, they need to consider, you know, bringing Nito into the game when Syndergaard's pitching. I mean, Steve Carlton's the all-time famous pitcher, Hall of Famer. He would not pitch unless Tim McCarver caught. And that lasted for 15 years, where they went, wherever they went, St. Louis, Philadelphia, they kept moving teams together. Tim McCarver couldn't even walk anymore, but he went out and caught Carlton's games, and Carlton made it that way.
The Mets' biggest issue is that the only other position Wilson Ramos can play is occupied by Pete Alonso.
So they can't take him out.
They can't take him out either.
That's true.
Number one.
A video has surfaced of Cowboys defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence disappointing a young football fan after the young fan asked for an autograph in a Saquon Barkley Giants jersey. Here is the interaction between Lawrence and the fan thanks to Bleacher Report. I know it was a little hard to hear, but I did as best as I could to get that to make that
Tell
work.
Us what
he said.
Said,
get another jersey, bro.
So get the right jersey, son. That's what he said.
Yeah,
said
I just completely misquoted him. But
you did.
Chris, how do you feel about DeMarcus Lawrence denying the young fan?
I don't feel any type of bad way about it. I think it was kind of funny, number one. He could have signed for him, but I think he had every right not to. Hmm. I mean, if you walk up to me with a Saquon Barkley jersey and what they played him this week.
It was that week. Yeah,
they're just getting ready to play him. That's probably not great planning on the kid's part. So I honestly don't totally blame him. I love to see when guys sign for kids all the time, but in this case, I'll give him a pass on that one.
Tony,
can I tell you guys a quick little story?
Yeah.
If you were wearing a Dodger hat and you asked my dad for an autograph, you got to know.
Yeah,
and your dad said yes to every
pretty much everybody.
Mm-hmm. All right.
So, I mean, as bad as it may seem, there are people that feel that way when it comes to certain teams. And football especially, like, you got to be kind of crazy anyway.
I have to
play
go
this sport.
Tackle this guy Saturday. I'm not going to sign his jersey.
Right. So, you know, I would have liked to see him sign it, but I certainly have been around when my dad has been like, nah, you got to get a different hat before I ever sign.
The look on the kid's face.
He was crushed.
It reminds me when Reggie Miller denied me an autograph back when I was 8 years old.
I can see.
Is that because you're wearing a Spike Lee shirt?
No, he was at
or a Knicks jersey.
Yeah, I don't even need to explain because that was good.
You've survived another edition of the Big Five on 97.3 The Fan.
All right, we are going to take a break. We're going to reset this show at the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Padres in action tonight. We'll talk a little bit of that, too. Gwen and Chris, 97.3 Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.